It's time for the book interview.
Boring books, that's all.
Books? Are you nuts?
No, nothing boring here. Money Life will bring you a book that is out right now. A book that will help you learn more about your finances.
A book that would make Ulysses look like it was written in crayon.
Smart books by smart authors that can help you decide how to best manage your money.
It's not a book! It's a weapon!
It's a weapon against making the kind of mistakes that people make in their financial lives. Money Life brings you the books, the authors, and the information to protect you from these missteps and help to keep your financial future secure.
I read your book. I liked it very, very much.
Don't just take it on faith. Hear the authors talk in depth about their books and give you the facts and figures to back up their information.
It's faith. It's the flower of light in the field of darkness. It's giving me the strength to carry on. You understand?
Is that from your book?
No, it's Johnny Cash, Live at Folsom Prison.
Welcome to the book interview on Money Life. I can't say that I'm necessarily excited from the standpoint of like, hey, we're going to talk about something that's going to make you so happy and give you so much energy. But from a, what are we talking about? How important is it? I think this is an important interview because I believe this is an important book. My guest is Howard Stephen Friedman. He is a data scientist and health economist who teaches at Columbia University, and his new book out this week is Ultimate Price, The Value We Place on Life. It was not done with any idea that there would be a pandemic. As best I can tell, and having read the book, I didn't see anything that was like, oh yeah, hey, you need to know this because these things are coming. But it is very relevant today because, well, we as individuals, as families, but also governments, have to come up with a price on human life. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And I've known this for a long time, from back in the days when my daughters were born. In 1991, I was writing a column when my oldest daughter was born, and I had to go to the Department of Agriculture to get their statistics on how much you spend on raising kids. And back then, they were talking about it. So this is something where it's been around for a long time. It hasn't been discussed. If you want to learn more about it, well, it's Ultimate Price, The Value We Place on Life. Go to Howard's website. It's howard-friedman.com and find him on Twitter. He's at Howard S. Friedman. You can get more information on the book. Howard Stephen Friedman, welcome to Money Life.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
I don't know that you could have had better timing for the subject of this book to be coming out, but it's not like the book comes to a conclusion and says, ah, here's how we do it. There is no magic formula here. Value is kind of in the eye of the beholder. It's no different in life than it is in investing, where I talk to value managers and each one has their own definition of value, let alone what represents it, right?
You're exactly right. There's no simple answer. There's no simple equation. What is critical is to understand what's the perspective. Why are we looking at this? What are we trying to achieve? Because when you look at the perspective, suddenly you start taking different equations into consideration, different factors. And when you think about this whole calculation of how much is a human life valued, it is nearly ubiquitous. Regulatory agencies look at this. For-profit companies are looking at this. Health insurance companies, life insurance. So it really surrounds us in all different ways.
Is one human life more valuable than another? I mean, we all might think, hey, I'm worth a little more than the next guy. But from a societal standpoint, if you think about it today, is somehow a doctor, somebody who's on the front lines of trying to save the rest of us, is their life more valuable than somebody who is in a nursing home, things along those lines? And are policies made that create different values on different lives?
Well, it's interesting because the regulatory agencies, you know, the EPA, for example, or the Food and Drug Administration, they specifically use the same value of life for everyone. That is, when they're looking to look into higher levels of safety, whether it's arsenic in the water or whether it's the amount of pollutants a factory can produce, they assume that the benefit of saving lives has the same value, regardless of whether you're rich or poor, young or old, or where you live. That said, we are seeing the reality that states are providing guidance in cases of, let's say, limited resources, who maybe should get priority. So no absolute rules, and certainly our federal government takes the position that all lives are valued equally. That wasn't always true, by the way. They tested the waters back in the Bush 43 administration. The EPA tried to value the lives of seniors less than that of other lives, and the public was livid. They pushed back on what they called the senior death discount. The EPA backed off on that idea, and today all regulatory agencies take the position that all lives are valued equally.
Is that the position you think they should take?
I think that that's the safest position to take. We have to go back to the original point that you had really emphasized, which was depending on what your purpose is in the calculations, you'll get different answers. But when we're talking from a society point of view, it's safer to start with the idea of equality than to start with the idea that I'm going to value some lives much more than others based on, and typically it's based on income. Because when you start looking at that, and that's what happens in civil courts, and this is underneath some of the assumptions that come up even in arbitrations and in for-profit companies, you end up with a situation that those who have the least money are often targeted with the most dangerous products that have the least protection. And there's a general rule of thumb that, you know, all of my research shows is that lives that are less valued are less protected, and lives that are more valued are more protected. And we've seen this even coming up in, unfortunately, this COVID situation, but we have decades of science that shows this is true.
From a public policy standpoint, every life has to be valued the same. In the real world, well, folks with money wind up being able to say, I can value my life more, or I can spend more to somehow value my life. There is that difference between how it should be valued and who has the ability to somehow extract more value, isn't there?
Absolutely. And this is a fact of life. And we saw this during the COVID situation early on. Who was getting tested? We were hearing reports of Tom Hanks as positive or NBA stars, but regular folks like ourselves weren't even able to access tests. Myself, I had severe conditions beginning of March. I went to urgent care and they told me, go back home and no, we don't really have tests for you. So best of luck. That's the reality. But we should be pushing society for a more equal situation. Now, also, I should say that when we step back to scenarios of, let's say, how civil courts value life, they very much bring income into the play. So it becomes a major part of the calculation itself.
Yeah, when we're talking about civil courts and, you know, somebody has a wrongful death suit and how much that person could have made, all those things factor in.
Absolutely. And that becomes really the driver of the calculation is, to your point, when they look at whether it's wrongful death or wrongful injury so that I'm no longer able to work, we start talking about replacement incomes. And that ends up with huge disparities. Some of that we can understand, but some of it is really tragically criminal. For example, Cheryl Thurston was a woman who died in New York. She was in a care facility. She was never supposed to be left alone. She was left alone, fell into a coma, died. Now, the court in New York determined that the care facility was negligent, but the payment $0. Cheryl wasn't earning money, according to the court, never suffered, and in New York, there is no value for intrinsic life. So her sister, who sued, was entitled to $0. Versus the O.J. Simpson case, where the civil court resulted in a judgment of over $30 million for the deaths of the two victims there.
It's fascinating how it works. You know, we talk about how it governs policy. I mean, here as we've been watching the pandemic, the issue truly is, of course, in those resources. It's if we overwhelm the hospital, then who gets the next hospital bed? Things along those lines.
Absolutely.
And
this is why the goal is to not overwhelm.
And is it okay at that point to somehow prioritize based on who, if I put on a ventilator, is most likely to come off of it, which is a very different way to value life and treatment than who's worth the most money or who's older, younger, or what have you?
You're absolutely right. Listen, the decision has to happen if you don't have enough resources. So priority one, of course, is keep the curve down, stay below that issue. But I live in New York. In New York, we ended up passing what was our actual capacity to support. So decisions are being made. That's a fact. The question is, now, who should get it? Some states have issued guidance. For example, Massachusetts issued guidance that basically said, in these situations, hospitals are advised to favor those who have the highest life expectancy. Those are most likely to live. They even suggested an age criteria. That was Massachusetts. Other states are not trying to issue specific suggestions or guidance. Maybe it's happening at the hospital levels, but a decision is being made.
As we get through this, do you believe that the value that we place on life versus the decision of, you know, reopening, that it's being done properly? Because people seem to think it's like an either or trade-off, you know, hey, what's the trade-off of reopening the economy versus staying closed and who might die? Do you look at the value proposition there between two very disparate things and think that people are valuing it properly or improperly?
So traditionally, this would be the job of a regulatory agency. They would have put a price tag. It would be about $10 million, and they would do that. This is what their job is. But in this particular case, it's not a binary decision. There are gradual ways to open that mitigate the risk as much as possible while still trying to help keep jobs available and productive. So it's not a binary decision. There are smart approaches to this. One of the things we need to do as a country is always be open to learning from other countries. There are countries who controlled this curve. There are countries who, as they reopen, are showing us how to reopen effectively. There are so many other opportunities for us to look around the rest of the world, see what's working, rather than make ourselves the experiment, because many countries are ahead of this curve, months ahead of this curve.
Howard, it's great stuff. I wish we had more time because it's a fascinating issue. It is so much in the public eye. And again, the book is remarkable, and it was written without even knowing that this stuff was going to happen. Yet you almost can't tell that, other than the fact that there's a couple of examples that when you do second edition, I'm sure are going to be in it. You really can't tell. It's a remarkable piece. It is out this week. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
That's Howard Stephen Friedman, everybody. He is the author of Ultimate Price, The Value We Place on Life. If you want to get that academic understanding so that it helps you sound a lot smarter, yeah, you want to check it out. You can find more at howard-friedman.com. He's on Twitter at Howard S. Friedman. All right, we just hit the halfway pole on the Monday edition of Money Life. But up next,
danger, danger.
We are heading for trouble. The guys from New Constructs will be here, and we're going to the danger zone when we come back right after this message.